necessary, I'll cut them. I have okay, you have both working? Okay. Let's begin because, okay, today, do me a favor, Yomo, close the door. And contact David Kufnis. He's waiting to hear from you, and he sent me a long email with a lot of information about what we're bringing, the people we're bringing over from Russia, but that's next January, probably. Okay, ready to roll? Today is Sunday. Yitzchak is on. Is celebrating now. He's not going to be here today or tomorrow.
No, he's taking somebody over to the
Beit Din. The Beit Din, and he explained to me what he was doing. Okay, today is October the 28th, 2018. It's a beautiful day in Yerushalayim. We're now on regular time. If I had my way, we should remain on regular time all year. But that's a different story. It's a very sad Sunday morning. It was a very difficult Shabbat here. Those of us living in Jerusalem, from about 10 o'clock on, there were endless helicopters going and coming from the Knesset. And we knew right away something is happening. I didn't find that out until the second bad news after Shabbat. Right after I made Havdalah, the phone rings, and it's my grandson in the Shomron, and he says, do you have acquaintances in Pittsburgh? So I figured out what happened, that they alerted, when a tragedy like that happens, they alerted all the settlements in Yehuda Vishomron, because they're very frightened of copycat. And they put them to be very careful and then strengthen up the people guarding the settlements. So my grandson knew about Pittsburgh already on Shabbos. But he thinks America's very small. He thinks America's New York, and outside of New York, there's probably a few suburbs. So I told him I don't know anyone in Pittsburgh offhand, but and then I heard what happened here with down south with Friday night. It was quite a Shabbat. God gives strength to our leaders, and the Rebbeinu Shel Olam should bring us the Gula Shleima. An interesting email from a Talmud of the Kollel from years ago, Rabbi Yitzchak Rosenblum, and he said, someone said in the Drasha during the civil rights movement, this is what he heard, that when Professor Heschel was planning to march with Dr. Martin Luther King, the Rav called Dr. Heschel to dissuade him from doing so because the Rav viewed Dr. King as an anti-Semite who was just looking to take advantage of the good nature of the Jewish people. All I can say is I never heard the story, but I'm not an expert on the Rav's relationship with Yehoshua Heschel, with Professor Heschel. I don't know if the story is true or not, but I mention that if anyone has any more information, adarabba v'adarabba. I suggested that he contact my classmate, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, Dr. Grach. He might know about his father and Dr. King, although Chaim was living in Jerusalem at the time. It could be, or maybe it's before Chaim moved to Jerusalem, 67. And perhaps Atara knows, or Tova, but maybe some students know from that period. But it's an interesting question, and if anyone comes up with an answer, I'll be happy to forward on to Rabbi Rosenblum, who I remember quite fondly. Relating to a comment I made last week about the Talna Rebbe and that the bar mitzvah of his grandson in Harzayin, and the Rebbe came and they built a machitza around him in Harzayin. So once again, his family got in touch with me. This is Rabbi Dr. David Twesky, who's a Talmud as well. And we spoke about this before, and again, he wrote to me, he contacted the family. And the person who we thought it could have been, he said, yes, it's true, we davened in Harzayin, but the bar mitzvah was in my father's shtibbel, the Talmud Rebbe's, his grandfather's shtibbel, in Philadelphia proper. So once again, I'm questioned on the information. So I only want to say to my defense that I heard this 1961, people, Meshichim Lefituma, a whole crowd from Winfield that walked across the city line that divided Philadelphia and Lower Merion, and davened in Lower Merion, and told me the story. And I kept a rack in my head, who are these people? Trouble is that probably no one is alive. But I can tell the Twesky family that I did hear it from Hilton Atlas. Hilton Atlas was a well-known person who came across from Winfield to Ballykinwood to Lower Merion and raised two wonderful sons. One son you know very well, Jetty Atlas, Lieutenant Colonel Jetty Atlas, who's very active for the Yehuda V'Shomron. That's one of the sons. And I'm absolutely positive that he told me the story, among others. So it could be there were two bar mitzvahs. It could be there was the real bar mitzvah in the shtibble, and then they celebrated in HaZayin. But this letter only strengthens my position that HaZayin was so powerful that people who were Shomrei Shabbos davened there. And he says he davened there, and his own children had a bar mitzvah in HaZayin. Okay, Atkan. Now on to a very important topic. You have to listen. I can't repeat it now. I have too much to do. But I spoke about HaZayin just now. Okay. I want to mention when I was growing up, every Sunday morning we had yeshiva, and we had some classmates who came from Far Rockaway. What you can't understand today, so many years later, I'm going back to 51, 52, 53, Far Rockaway was like, wow, from Jews who have made it, have left the city, have left, and they're in Far Rockaway on the beach, and they're from, and wow, and there were two big shuls. There was the white shul and Shaarei Tefillah. The white shul, and both had rabbis that were Zeichel Arichet Yamin, told them, very distinguished rabbis. The white shul, Rabbi Ralph Pelkowitz. All of you are familiar with the name. His years, 19, he was there, he was in the white shul 65 years. He just died. From 1951 to 2016, he was the rabbi of the white shul. He was Zeichel Arichet Yamin Tovim. And he has a son very active in YU, the OU, the famous psychologist, I believe it is, Rabbi Dr. David Pelkowitz. And he was a Torah Vedas Musmach. And in Shaarei Tefillah was Rabbi Emanuel Rachman, Rabbi Dr. Emanuel Rachman, who from the white shul went on to Fifth Avenue Synagogue. He succeeded Chief Rabbi Jacobowitz in Fifth Avenue Synagogue, and in Fifth Avenue Synagogue, from there he went on to become president of Bar Ilan. These were two great individuals. Sunday morning, we grabbed the kids from Far Rockaway. What did Rabbi Rachman say in his speech? The kids from the white shul, it was called the white shul because the outside of the shul, the wood or the blocks, the cinder blocks or the bricks, were white. And what did Rabbi Pelkowitz speak about? And boy, that was the big topic on Sunday morning. Who had a more potent address, a better different Torah? Ah, and these two names were legendary. Now, Rabbi Rachman is 1910 to 2008. Rabbi Pelkowitz is 1921 to 2018. So they lived approximately exactly the same length of time, and they overlapped. They were basically contemporaries. Two very interesting individuals. Someone who wants to do a good book that'll be a bestseller, Far Rockaway and its roots. Rachman, Pelkowitz, the two shuls, how they involved. It's a different world today. When we were growing up, we believed, the white shul of Torah V'Das was infinitely frummer than Shaarei Tefillah. Today, so many years later, I don't believe you can make that statement anymore. Shaarei Tefillah moved all the way, it became an overgrown shtibbel, they got rid of the benches, they put in tables, it's a different experience davening there, the white shul, Rabbi Feiner, Rabbi Uri Orlin, the YU graduate, but fits in very well to Shaarei Tefillah. It's a different ballpark today. Now, Rabbi Rachman became very famous because in modern times, we have a terrible problem. And as I've told you so many times, and it hurts me to say it, but I have to be honest, the Musar movement, which changed my life, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and all that Musar stood for, In the course, it began, went public, let's say, 1840. From 1840 to today, if there were 1,000 people who really were affected by the Muslim movement, I'm overstating the case. The Hasidic movement affected and had hashpa on millions and millions of Jews. And the difference is very simple. The Muslim movement demands you become a tremendous individual, a spiritual individual, that the most guiding factor in your life is who am I, what am I, how is my relationship with God, with Torah, with the Jewish people. Everything else is secondary. Unfortunately, not many people really can live that way. And it's a great disappointment to me. And I needn't elaborate. We're living at a time where so many scandals, and God have mercy, and even in the shuls I just mentioned, and some of the history of the rabbinate, it makes not the New York Times, it would make the gossip pages of the daily news. And Hasidic movement's a different ballpark. You can be a Hasid, and drink a bissel vodka, you lift the Rebbe, l'chaim, you're the happiest guy in the world. I don't say that's a top quality Hasid, but that's the beginning. All right, top quality Hasidim, really, Gedolei, Gedolei Israel, Gedolei Yirat Shemayim, all right, it has an impact. But it's not like Musa. Musa requires Adam ki Yakrif Kopen, Rabbi Yisrael Salanta used to say. You have to be a mensch, Adam, in order to bring a carbon, mitnaf sein a mensch. You have to be an individual, a great individual, not an overdeveloped monkey or animal, lo aleinu. When this is a reality, and it hurts me in particular, because I grew up in the Muslim movement, and I told you 1,000 times over, I have no interest in Jewish philosophy. Whenever someone asks me a question in Jewish philosophy, I tell them, what's the question? I saw the Shanghai crowd. I saw living Torah before my eyes. I need no proofs. I need no philosophy. I need no theology. I touched the living chain of Torah and tradition. Now, because people are people, and Adam Karabates a lot small, and it's hard to be a Musanik, so in modern times, the greatest problem we ever had in Halacha is Aguna. Aguna people left the house, the door closed, they went on business, they traveled from Warsaw to Vilna, and they never came back again. A person went to war when Jews started coming out of the ghetto, we became part of, I don't have to tell you, Napoleon said to the Jews, are you Frenchmen or are you Jews? Will you serve in the army? Is France your country? You all heard my lectures 30 years ago on the Monday class dealing with the Napoleon Sanhedrin. Well, if you become part of the big world, you're fighting the Russian army, the Polish army, the German army, your husband went to battle and he never returned. And on the problem of Aguna, millions and millions and millions of pages have been written, and that's not figurative, that is literally. Look at the Rakefet Aron Chelek Gimel, 340, 50 pages devoted to Aguna and Mamzera, two topics that intertwine. And I'm giving you hundreds, if not thousands, of sources over the years on these topics. But in modern world, there's a new invention. It's a man-made Aguna. It's very sad. When a marriage breaks up, I just got a call. Some of you know that when I gave that big talk in New York in March in memory of the Rav, I had the greatest audience I ever spoke to in my life, and how many Rabbanim and world famous people. And I was on Shpilkes. Why? Because the car's waiting for me after the talk to take me out to the island of Sadeh Kedushin. So Yomo was in my office. He heard I just got a call from the Talmud who was remarrying, and she was a second marriage for both. It didn't even last 6 months. Not even 6 months. Today, the get is being written. All right, at least he's giving a get. There's no fighting. They're older. They have a little seichel. There was a prenup. But people break up. A marriage breaks up. Look, if you saw the latest Torah tidbits, they're offering to download a book on how to keep a marriage going. Don't go to a lawyer. Don't go to Rakefet's daughter, to Leonard. Don't do anything till you download this book and read it. And when a marriage breaks up, it's a tremendous tragedy. And you have no idea how much suffering. But then you add to it, the guy says, like the Chinaman used to say, no tiki no washi. What is no tiki no washi? If you don't have the Chinaman's ticket, you can't get your wash back. Binyamin, I know what I owe you. I'm not there yet. The fourth volume, when that's ready to roll, you will get your reward. And it'll only cost you 36,000 shekel to the IOU list. I haven't forgotten
this. Rebbe said dollars last time.
How much?
Rebbe said dollars last time.
Dollars, forget about dollars. If what happened in Pittsburgh can happen, what value do dollars have back here? So, no tiki no washi, no money, no gitti. And I know men who have demanded 100,000, 500,000. It's terrible. And you have to understand the Torah system is such. Now this I have to make clear to you, and I've said it 1,000 times last week. Ger v'tosha v'nachi machem, this week's Pasha. We live in two worlds. Avraham Avinu already understood that. We live as Jews, and we live as citizens of the Western world. And it doesn't matter, forget about that, I once lived in America. Even in Israel, you're part of the big Western world. You turn on a computer, you're part of Western culture. You're a Jew and you're a citizen of the world simultaneously. And this is the reality of human existence for a Jew who is committed. Rav Hirsch didn't lo chidei shum davar. This is part and parcel. Yafta lekim liyefet v'yishkom biyavet leishem. So, what in the big world, you understand, they have a different system. A man doesn't want to give a get, the judge will declare her divorced, the court can intervene. A man is missing, every state has a different law. Some states, if the man doesn't contact his wife for 5 years, missing and assumed dead, she can remarry. He doesn't contact his wife sometimes 7 years. In modern times, maybe it's 3 years already. Every state has different laws. Every state. So logically speaking, these laws are wonderful. The man walked out of the house. He went to Batley, went on a business trip. He's missing. Let the woman remarry. But we have a different law system. Missing does not mean anything. There's a cheskat chayim. When a person leaves the room, we assume he's still alive unless we hear to the contrary. And we can't play hocus pocus and say just because he's missing, we can assume he's dead and the woman can remarry. Now, when a man demands money, here there's another part that plays that the Western mind contradicts the Torah concept. The Torah concept, a man can have more than one wife. A woman can have only one husband. And there are reasons why. I spoke about this when I dealt with sex and marriage. We can understand it perhaps, but whether we understand it or not, this is the Torah system. We said about the Torah system, Naseh v'nishma. When God came to all the nations of the world, will they take the Torah? Every other nation laughed at the Ribbono Shel Olam, spat in his face and told them, what? You can't rob, not fraud, can't commit adultery, not fraud, can't have mishke bezacha, homosexuality, not for us. Only the Jews said Naseh v'nishma, and this is why we're sitting here today. Every other nation in the world has long since assimilated. Show us an original Greek, an original Roman. Show us an original Jew. This room is filled with original Jews, and listening to the shir are thousands and not tens of thousands of original Jews across the wide expanse of the Jewish universe. With us, a man, this is a terrible situation. He doesn't give a get. Who knows what he's doing in his sexual life? The woman, God forbid, if she doesn't act properly, any child born of a subsequent union is a mamza. She's an eshiti. She never got a get. So the man holds this over the woman. And Rabbi Rachman, and I have to tell you, I knew Rabbi Rachman intimately. How did I know Rabbi Rachman so well? I didn't live in Far Rockaway. I grew up in the Bronx. I grew up in an area, based lower middle class at the best. We were, we lived, Steve knows what I'm talking about. We, hundreds of families, big buildings, who had extra money. I don't know, let me not be too personal, but I remember my parents, I didn't have money for a winter suit and a summer suit. I wore the same suit all year. And sometimes a winter suit during the summer is really hot, and in those days to go daven, you had to wear a suit, you had to put a jacket on. It's not like living in Israel where you can daven in shirt sleeves. So I didn't live in Far Rockaway, but when I entered the yeshiva in 1951, my classmate was Michael Rackman, who I'm friendly with until today. And Michael and I learned B'chavruta. So occasionally I would go out to Far Rockaway for Shabbat to learn, to be with Michael in his house. Could you imagine? Here I am in Rabbi Rackman's house, Far Rockaway, 51, 52, 53. And I'm seeing and knowing. He was a prince of a person, 100%. And this issue bothered him. In 1975, he went public with a proposal that was based upon two Gemaras. I'm going to quote the Gemaras in a minute. I'm going to leave the analysis for you to go to Rakefet Aaron Chelek Gimel. But I am going to leave you with food for thought on these Gemaras. One Gemara, Baba Kama, Daf Kuf Yud Amid Bet, Daf Kuf Yud Aleph Amid Aleph. Gemara raises the following question. And the Gemara there is talking about Mekach Ta'ut, when something goes wrong with an agreement, a marriage, a money agreement. Mekach Ta'ut, but the Gemara tells us, look what happens. A man marries, and this was very common. It's not as common today. Chalitza. Why is chalitza more common? Nowadays, we live much longer. Nowadays, what the Meitzer Tivli died from in 1928, osteomyelitis of the gum, is cured with antibiotics. I had osteomyelitis of the gum in Maplewood, New Jersey, and I remember Dr. Kansius giving me injections, and within a few days I was perfect, I was fine. So we live longer, Baruch Hashem. People have children, a lot of help is now given. I need not tell you what goes on in Israel, and America copies Israel, Israel copies America. The work that goes into helping people who have difficulty conceiving to conceive a child. But years ago, chalitza was very common. Men died young, people died young, women had no children, the man had no children, so she needed chalitza from his brother. Now, what happens with chalitza? This is the Gemara I'm quoting now. Ela mayata v'ema shenafla lefnei mukach shin tipeit b'lo chalitza. That a woman who got married, now the man who wants to marry her, Yibam, forget about Chalitza, Yibam comes first. He's Mukach Shchin. All right, Moshe, how would you translate that? His face is all broken out. He's an abominable looking person. And I, this poor woman, she's thinking, I don't want to marry this man. I want to be free, and he's insisting I want to marry you. And if for the sake of argument he'll agree to chalitza, he's holding her up for money. Wait a minute. In the first place, to fall before this man, she never ever thought that she would wind up with his brother, Mukach Shchin, so ugly looking, face all broken out, pimples all over his body. A word in Yiddish, egelhaftig. Translation, what do you say? Herbie, disgusting? I don't know. Egelhaftig, maybe disgusting. Okay. So the Gemara answers, no, it's either Yibam or chalitza.
Anansahadei,
the minach nichala b'choldahu, k'derishlakesh the ama, tav lemetiv tandu, me lemetiv almala. Wow, what a concept. That a woman wants to marry. And Rish Lakish gave us a statement, a witty statement. Better to grow old too than to grow old alone. And if you read Yediot, this was a whole article, I believe it's on Yediot on Friday, a whole article on some actress that just got divorced, and she's talking about the trauma, she has to sleep alone, and the husband's not, the article. But wow, this successful actress who goes back to acting, and her husband is one of the actors that she acts with, but was she crying about her divorce? She's a walking advertisement for this Gemara. It means that even a mukach shchin, even an ugly guy, when I was in Bnei Akiva, so one girl said to me, I quote, I must have been 15, 16, and she was maybe 14, 15, I still remember where she lived. And she said to me, oh, you're such a nice guy, it's a shame you have such a crooked nose. So then I didn't know what to answer. Today I would answer, I have a crooked nose, this is a rabbinic nose. Look at pictures of Moriah Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. Look at pictures of Rav Aaron Cutler. Ah, this is a nose to be proud of. But you see, this girl already was complaining that, God forbid, she should go out or be friendly with a guy with a crooked nose. And yet the Gemara says a woman is desperate to marry. Tav lemetiv dume lemetiv amala. And therefore, there's no mekachtot here. She cannot make a case. I married this guy. I never dreamt I wouldn't have children. I never dreamt I would be subject to Yibam with such an ugly brother. What a Gemara, what a Gemara. So Rabbi Rachman says, in the year 1975, women are no longer on this level. This concept, what Shlucker said, no longer exists. We cannot say this is a chazaka, this is a given, this is a concept. Nowadays, women go to college, women go to graduate school, women are independent. Women don't want just any marriage. I'm quoting Rabbi Rachman. They want a proper marriage. And they're not willing to sacrifice everything just for the sake of being married. Now, if Rabbi Rachman is correct, now you can start to expand the concept. This man doesn't want to give a get. The hell with him. I never dreamt I would marry a man who'd be so money hungry and hold me up like this. If I knew that this would happen, I would have never married him. And Rabbi Rachman now is introducing the concept of mekach ta'ut. I'm not Cain. Had I known the facts, I would have never married. I would never need a get. And this is a valid concept in halacha. There are certainly two cases where 99% of the poskim would agree mekach ta'ut. And I'll give you two examples. By the way, all the sources are either in Rakefet Aron Chelik Gimel or are coming out in Rakefet Aron Chelik Dalid, where the first 120 pages are refutation of Rabbi Rachman's point of view. All the sources would agree. What are the two cases? Well, the famous case, yeah, Rav Moshe, Rav Ovadia, this case repeats itself. A lot of these cases, interestingly, happen in Baltimore. A guy got married in Baltimore, nice girl, from people. And then the girl sees this guy has moments of insanity. Then she finds out that before he was married, he needed psychiatric help. Sometimes they find out before he was married, he was institutionalized. In a case like this, Reb Moshe paskened la halacha, if he refuses to give a get, she does not need a get. She can marry again. Mekach ta'ut. She married a man whom she thought was sane. She did not know, Steve underlined the words, did not know that he had psychological problems, that he needed psychiatric help. You read me, Rick?
No.
Okay. Did not know. Then I'll give you another. The other case Rav Moshe deals with, Rav Avadya, everyone deals with this case. I had this in Michlala, we had a case like this. You marry a man, and late koach gafra, impotent. The girl says, look, I want to have children. Husband is impotent. Reb Moshe paskins, he doesn't want to give a get, she doesn't need a get. I quote Reb Moshe, Leit lecha mum gadol mise. You don't have a bigger problem with marriage than a man who's impotent. Part of marriage, particularly for a woman, chavava, he ain't kol chai, is to get married. And if the man is impotent to get married to have children, the man is impotent, there'll be no children. And in normal society, today I have to tell you, Ribbono Shel Olam shed mercy on us, what goes on. In normal Torah society, no woman would know before the marriage whether or not the man is impotent. In normal, God have mercy. I can tell you a case we had. God's a lapidin. But she doesn't know. Mekach taut. Now I can tell you in parentheses, and this I mentioned Rabbi Koopman's memories, is Zichrono Levracha, Kala Kavod to Rabbi Koopman. We had a case in Michlas, being the 70s. I remember the girl, fine lady, and her husband was at Sanchan, had done Hezda, tall, impotent. Rabbi Koopman paid for psychological help, and they cured him. You see, impotency, 90% of the time, maybe a psychologist will correct me, but 90% of the time, it's a psychological state. There are reasons why. I don't want to go any further, low namely to talk about it in public, but I've studied the literature. It can be cured. This person was cured. But you have to be willing to be cured, or God forbid it, to be someone born. I have another case with a student where literally there was a problem. I don't want to go further. And he could not father children, which nothing to do with psychological, it had to do with a physical reality. All right. So Rabbi Rachman comes along, takes this Gemara, translates it into modern times, and he says, very simply, in modern times, a woman marries, she has self-esteem and self-respect, and she can make a better living than her husband. She didn't marry for someone. And he goes way beyond someone who has problems, psychological impotency. It goes way beyond it. If I knew that this man would be so cruel and demand money, I would have never married him. If I knew that this man has such a temper and yells at me from time to time, I would have never married him. This, by the way, came up in the response to literature with the Brisker Rav's daughter and refusing to take a get. It's an unbelievable story. This came up, mamish la halacha. If I knew he would yell at me, would Malkiel Kutler, with the Brisker Rav's granddaughter, I should say, would be Rav Michal Feinstein's daughter and Rav Baron Kutler's son, Malkiel. This grandson. This came up la halacha. Yeah, I read the literature, but it's not. I don't have time now to go into it. But if I knew, he would yell at me. He has a temper. Well, if you take Rabbi Rachman's concept, ultimately you have destroyed the whole sanctity of marriage, because what would happen in every marriage? Something goes wrong. She walks away. If I knew that this man didn't know how to cook and would depend upon me to make a cup of coffee. I married him to be his wife, not to be his shivcha, his female slave. You follow? Where do you draw the line? You can go on and on and on in complaints, and if he doesn't want to give a get, you tell him, go fly a kite. The rabbis will say, mekach ta'ut. So, la halacha, when you go into this aspect of Rabbi Rachman's proposal, 99.99% of the poskim will accept makach ta'ut when it comes to impotency or psychological illness. Beyond that, I have yet to see a psak which will accept mekach ta'ut, and you can understand it. Anyone in this class who never got angry, raise your hand. Okay? I see a lot of smirking going on. I don't see any hands in the air. And I can tell you, I'll talk about myself. I can tell you, my father had a temper. Oh boy, he had a temper. I saw the rub in his prime. Boy, you didn't bother the rub. He could fly off the handle. Oh, you know, it's legendary, the stories. The Sheyurim, the 50s into the 60s, the big change. In the 70s, the Rebbe was a little Zaydi sitting in class. Boy, we were much better off because we knew if we didn't toe the mark, there'd be a volcanic explosion. Okay? But I would... he mellowed gradually. It was a whole... His illness, 59-60, that illness already started the trend. I once spoke with Abe Lavovitz, Zichrono Livracha, and he told me, he absolutely agrees with me, that it was from that illness that the trend begins down. And the letter I have from him is right after the illness, where you see his appreciation of Talmidim who love him and understand him. That's a whole new development that he starts to broaden and mature in that respect. But I worked very hard. When was the last time you saw me angry in the classroom? No, Jack, you remember? 1972 in Michlala, when the girls were maledicting Rabbi Gorin with the Lange case with the Amratzit and repeating what they're hearing from B'nai Brak. I did get upset. It's the last time I got angry, certainly in the classroom. But occasionally, you know, kids, grandchildren, I don't know. I don't remember when I got angry last. Maybe one time with your wife, you get upset. Do it that way. Now you go older, you thank God your wife is functioning, and you never get upset. No, people got angry. You're going to say, end the marriage? I didn't marry because he's going to get angry. Didn't marry. He doesn't make a good enough living. I didn't marry. I had a case where a student didn't go to work. She married him, and as it's the Gansatag, he davens at 10, he became Hasidic, he got Hasidic blood. Oh, what went on? But they couldn't annul the wedding. They needed a get. It was some story till she got the get. But where do you draw the line? Let me move on, Michael, because I have a world to do. I'll take questions at the end, okay? Write down what you want to ask.
It's relevant now, but it won't be relevant
later. Go ahead, yeah, quick.
Is mekach ta'ut used to any extent in Israel with the Israeli rabbis?
Certainly with late Korach Gavra and psychological, it's used, period. Outside of that, it's not used.
And physical and psychological abuse situations are taken into consideration?
If you can show psychologically that he was like this before and you didn't know about it, would be a big factor in getting the right to remarry mekach ta'ut. Of course, it's halacha. It's halacha, Rabbi Vajra, it's certainly halacha. But come back here.
I mean, the situation he just raised in terms of someone who sleeps until 10 o'clock.
Right, right.
Isn't that a form of abuse?
Abuse, it means more physical abuse than...
No,
I understand, but with the rabbinate, if a guy starts smacking around his wife and she didn't know that he was like this, I had a case like that too, don't ask what I've seen in my life. But a line has to be drawn. You can't just abolish marriage, but it certainly would be a sniff, let's put it that way. But I'd have to know a case, see how I can put it together. Okay?
I mean,
I agree.
The famous case in America with Epstein. for example.
Right.
I mean, clearly there was psychological issues.
Well, that's why they were
Hila in terms of when she left.
Right.
But it wasn't accepted.
No, no. Then they were mocked there. Rav Kamenetsky was mocked there.
No.
What do you mean, no?
It's unclear what his position is.
No, that's what I was told. No one has ever seen the Tshuva, so I can't comment. But I was told that he was mocked there on the basis of Mekachtot. Okay, but let me go further here. There's another problem altogether with Rabbi Rachman's position. And this, of course, was the Rav's published stance. And this opens a world of thinking, thought, research. Can we ever reach a conclusion? I don't know. The Rav felt that Rabbi Rachman, in taking Tav Lemeitiv Dume Lemeitiv Armala and turning it in to a concept that today is negated, abolished, times have changed, women have changed, the purpose of marriage to a certain degree has been altered as a result. The Rav felt that even today, with all the ability a woman has, with all the liberation, with all the knowledge, with all the income, a woman wants to be married. She doesn't want to remain alone. The Rav taught us a new word here, a word that I learned from him in the 50s and was repeated time and again. It is ontological, meaning it is part of the very creation. And the Rav said, you don't speak of a gay spinster, you speak of a gay bachelor. But there never is a gay spinster. In Hebrew, by the way, the Rav is absolutely right, the expression is Ravaka Chamutza, but I've never heard the word Ravak Chamutz. And I can tell you on two levels. One of the greatest schliyot I had in my life was to be a friend, a confidant, a colleague of the greatest woman I ever met, Professor Nechama Leibovitch. And Nechama said to me more than once, I would give away all my knowledge and all my achievements if I could have only have been a mother. And she didn't only say it to me. If you read the biographies of her, there are two biographies, they both quote this exact statement from others, not from me. I was not interviewed. But I heard this with my own ears from Nechama. But I'll tell you more, Moshe. My wife has two aunts, Zichronon Levracha, they're not alive. And these two aunts, remember my wife's family, this is from her father's side. Her father's side came to America right after World War I. My wife's grandfather, who was a Belzer Chassid, was a medic in the Austro-Hungary army in World War I. And then they came to America. And he remained a frum Jew. He married a distant cousin. They were Shomrei Shabbos. But the children already were exposed to the big Western world. My father-in-law remained frum, taught himself Hebrew, read Haggadah, big Zionist. Fascinating what one man could achieve. But these two sisters never married. No one was good enough for them. They're part of the big world. They went to work. They made money. They could do whatever they want. Religion was unimportant. Later in life, when Malka and I were already here in Israel for many years, whenever we went to America and had the ability, time, we went to visit them. Later they were in Florida. I was in Florida a number of times. We went to visit them. And here these ladies said to us in their 70s, I quote, the biggest mistake we made in our lives was not to marry. So it's a very interesting question. Is Rabbi Rachman right? Or is the Rav right? And you should know there are chazakot that do change. No, I give you the prime example. Ein adam aseh bilat tov bilat snut. that no individual turns his sexual life into harlotry. And nowadays, can you say that Chazakah? Reb Moshe deals with it, the Rav deals with it, the Minchat Yitzchak deals with it, Rav Avadja deals with it, and everyone agrees when there's civil marriage, it does not create a marriage. We consider these bilats nu today. This is the life, this is the way they live. So we see Chazakah can alter, but is this ontological? A very fascinating question. Halakha l'maisa, this was one Gemara that Rabbi Rachman quoted. Moshe, very quick, I have to move on.
You already see the thing about Ein Adam, also because the Rambam says that Ein Adam Kasha, it's like, it's only talking about a certain, someone who cares to keep it.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. You're quoting yours truly. I spoke about single women going to mikveh. This creates the greatest halachic problem ever. Because if they care about mikveh, what does it show you? Ein Adam said, Bilato Bilatznut, you're quoting me, you're quoting our problems with the West Side, going back to the 70s, but leave it for now. Okay. Rabbi Rachman had another idea. And this other idea is use the magic word Hafkat Kedushin. And this Hafkat Kedushin appears in Shas. There are about four different cases. I analyze every case in great detail in Chelek Dalet, but I'm only going to cite one case for the sake of the lecture. It's a case you will know, the Gemara in Gittin Daf Lamed Bet, and it continues through to Lamed Gimel Lamed Aleph, Lamed Bet Amid Aleph, Lamed Gimel Lamed Aleph. It's the famous sugya of a man gives a get al yedei shuliach. What makes a get the get? If anyone ever saw the way a get is given, it's the power of the man to say, Lishma, he has to say, I want this get to be written for my name, gives his name, his wife's name, Lishem Gerushin. If you don't put that power into the get, it has no power. That's why a ktuva, Herbie, when you get married, they can take a ktuva out of the garbage. I found the ktuva. I can fill in the names. I had cases like this where, remember, with Chaim Gold, it was taken out of the garbage, plain and simple. Fine. You don't need anything lishma. You can print it out, take a Xerox, fill in the names. All the ktuva is a guarantee that you will be a good husband. Today you need an additional part to the ktuva, the prenuptial. But that's what a ktuva is, Simon. Okay. A get, what creates a get? The power behind it, the thought behind it. Alright, so when a get is given, the man does what he has to do, the sofer is there, the lady is there, the edim are there, the beitin is there, you give it to the lady in front of the beitin, fine, good, it's a get. What about if the woman doesn't want to come, or the woman lives too far away? People can psychologically be very foolish and stupid, and the woman who loved this man and ran off with him, now she says, I don't want to look that Russia in the face. Asul yistakel b'tnei Russia. The hell with him. Pardon my language, but the Rebbe used the word, so I'm allowed to use it. Okay. The heck with him. So she doesn't come. Or the woman lives in China, the man is in Israel. We've had cases like this. Siberia, the Ukraine. So you send the get al yedei shliach. So the guy is a wise guy. He gave the get, he authorized the get. You send it al yedei shliach. While the shliach is going, the guy knows it takes the man, the shliach, 2 days to get to China. A day to get to the Ukraine. Hours to deliver the get from Jerusalem to Haifa. So he goes and he's mevatel the get. He says on his own or in front of one. You go into Tosfos, you'll see. You go into Rakef and Chelek Dalet, you'll see. But he goes not in front of a beitin, privately, in front of one or two people. And he says, I did a horrible thing. I divorced my wonderful wife, the wife of my youth. I'm mevatel the get. Worthless. She gets the get. The shliach doesn't know. The wife doesn't know. She meets a nice boy from Gruz, marries him. It's her second marriage, his first. They have three children. 10 years later, signs her up. All Yerushalayim, B'nai Brak, wherever good Jews live. These kids are mamzerim. I was mevatel the get. The woman had no right to remarry. The marriage is adulterous. And therefore the kids are mamzerim. She was still an eshet ish. So the Chachamim saw, nu binyam, do you know this Gemara? The Chachamim saw how devious this man is. They said, we'll teach him a lesson. And we retroactively nullified the marriage. Hafkat kedushim, l'mafreya. So the Gemara asked, wait a minute, how can you do it? He gave a kesef. He gave a kesef, hefka beitin hefka. Beitin has the right to declare the money he gave her ownerless, and therefore he gave her nothing. But he lived with her, and isha niknesh bekesef b'shtav b'biya, one, two, or three, not all three, either or. So he lived with her. We declare the biya biatznut, called the makadesh al dat rabbanim makadesh, and the biya is biatznut. So Rabbi Rachman introduced the idea that the rabbis have the power to be mafkia kedushin. And therefore, in all these cases where a man doesn't want to give a get, we can use the concept of mekach ta'ut, or we can add to it hafkat kedushin, let the rabbis declare that she can walk away free and remarry and the kids will be legitimate and we will solve this terrible problem of money, hungry thieves, pirates who hold up nice Jewish women. My dear students, there's only one problem with this. You can go through all of Shas and Paiskim. In all the cases, without exception, where the rabbis retroactively nullify the kedushin, there was always a get. The Gemara in Gittin is a prime example. Was a get written here? What do you say, Moshe? Absolutely. Was a get delivered here? Absolutely. There was a problem with the get. He annulled it. That's where the rabbis step in and use Havka'at Kedushin, as the Gemara defines it, to certify the get. Without a get, this certification, Simon, are you with me, does not get off the floor. The get must be there. In all the cases that the Gemara talks about, there was a get. Because there it was b'shat ma'aseh, but in all the retroactive annulment, there was a get. I'm with you, Moshe, but take a look at Chelek Dalet, you'll understand. But I'm right. What Rabbi Rachman's talking about 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years later, this is the way all the Rishonim learn, that the Hafkat Kedushin is the vehicle to be machshir the get. That's exactly the concept. So you see, it's not so simple. Then there's another problem. Michael, do the rabbis have the power today to be mafkia kedushin? What do you think? Do the rabbis have this power? How much power do the rabbis have today? Tell me, Steve, am I a rabbi? A real rabbi? Absolutely not. Moshe, what do we mean by a real rabbi? Smicha, ish mi pi ish. Not only that, in order for the rabbis to have power, there has to be unity. Underline the word unity. Benjamin, where do I get the word unity from? Can you reestablish a Sanhedrin today? You know how much has been written on it? Simon, how many lectures have you heard already on reestablishing a Sanhedrin? We have a country, we have an army, we have a police force, we have Divrei Torah being published, hundreds of Sfarim a year in modern Hebrew. Why can't we have a Sanhedrin? Look up the Rambam. This may be the most famous Rambam ever. Hilchat Sanhedrin, Perek Dalet, Halacha Yud Aleph. And you'll see the Rambam says, perhaps if all the sages would come together and decide to reinaugurate the smicha, perhaps, he says, we could start it all over. What a machlekes there was 500 years ago over reestablishing smicha in Tzfat. And then the Rambam adds three famous words. V'hadava tzarich hechreya. He says, I'm not certain, I'm not sure. But even before we can talk about can they have that power reestablish the smicha, we need unity. Yomo, is there unity in the rabbinate today? Can I ask you that simple question? You live in Yerushalayim. You walk every day between Givat Mordechai, Bayit Vagan, and Geula Meir Sha'arim. Did you ever experience unity? How many candidates are there for mayor of Yerushalayim who are Shema Torah Mitzvah? 3 out of 4. The rabbis are so divided that it looks like an apple cake that fell on the floor and smashed into 100 little pieces. And this is Yerushalayim Mir HaKodesh. Rabbis, power, unity, smicha, hafkat, kedushin, retroactively, where's the get? And you see, Rabbi Rackman, he means well. The problem is real. But his proposal does not get off the halachic floor. Logically, if you're a Western person, he's absolutely right. But we're bound by the Vahashem Zu Halacha. And here the Rav said, and this is irrefutable, when it comes to the ontological question, perhaps we can differ with Moriah Rebbe. It's an interesting question. But the Rav said, if Rabbi Rackman is correct, why do we need all the subjects in Yevamot on Aguna, the classic Aguna? Why do we need Siman Yud Zayin and Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezra, which is the largest Siman in all the Shulchan Aruch on Aguna? Why do we need the millions and millions of pages that were written Lahatir Aguna? All you have to do is be mafkir kedushin retroactively. This is eshet ish, what you're dealing with here. Be careful. But there's even a bigger problem. And here's what happened to me. B'didei haviyuvda. When I was in America, I see the impact of the Western world and these terrible problems of women who are left agunat over money. And you see, even in Shaarei Tefillah, with the firmest people in the world, with people whose children never set foot in YU, all their kids wound up near Yisrael in Baltimore. But they all had that feeling that Rabbi Rackman created. If the rabbis wanted, they could achieve. And this is what I really feel bad about. Because it's not lack of will on the part of the rabbis. It's because we are pledged to a divine system. And we have to work within that divine system. We can't act at will. Shabbat is Shabbat, Kashrut is Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha is Tarat Mishpacha, and Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezra is Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezer. And I want to tell you, Michael, if you think this is only my opinion, I'm the happiest guy in the world when I found in Wikipedia on the article on Rabbi Emanuel Rachman, that chief rabbi or former chief rabbi of the British Empire, the famous Rabbi Sachs, who is a walking Kiddush Hashem when he speaks, when he writes, says exactly what I just said. That the problem with Rabbi Rachman's proposal, it exacerbated the problem, because the masses really believe if the rabbis want, how did Rebbetzin Greenberg, Blue Greenberg put it, if there's a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way. Nothing is further than the truth. There's a halacha that our will has to be to master it, understand it, but we must live within it. And I will now want to move one step further.
Do you think that if you went to...
One second. Hold off. Let me move one step further. And this is the greatness of Rav Ovadia. And on the Israeli scene, we have a lot to be thankful here. And I saw even the detractors, even the women who came from the finest frumbis homes, daughters of Chassidic Rebbeim, students of Aaron Rakefet in Michlala in the 1970s. I see even these women who are world famous today, authors, fighters, far from voting for Dati or Haredi party, some of them Chavre Chaberat Knesset of secular parties, Baruch Ata Adonai Melech Olam Shekel. Even these women admit we've come a long way with the rabbinate, because Dayanim are growing up in the state of Israel. It's a new generation. There's a new reality. When I came in Aliyah, the overwhelming majority of the Rabbanim, Haredim or Datiyim, were Yudapeisha, Moroccans, Tunisians, Jerba. Very, very few were born and bred in Eretz Yisrael. I yet saw the remnant that survived Hitler. I remember once I saw a famous rabbi, Rav Kipnis, getting into a taxi, must be 71, 72. And I went over to the taxi driver. I said, Teida lecha sheyesh lecha zchut gedola zarav mufusam b'chol olam kulo b'glal gazmuto b'torah. And I remember the taxi driver thanked me for telling him. It was a different world. But these rabbanim were not part of the modern world. Today you have rabbanim, even Haredi world, but people who know Israel, the army, modernity, women, the challenges. And here we have a halachic system that if we follow, we can solve many problems. The more you can learn, the greater the posek you are. Koach da hatera adif. The power to be lenient is more important than being stringent, but you have to know what you are doing. And here I want to cite what we spent half a year in class, the Gottlet of Rav Ovadia. This man, and remember we cited to you Chelek Yud Gimel of Yabia Omer, published posthumously, going from Simanim Dalet 3 through Yud Zion. Rav Ovadia takes question after question on Mamzeret, and there's not one that he doesn't find a heter for. And here he's guided, and it's the Sugyan Masechet Kedushin, Daf Ayin Gimel Amid Aleph. Remember, when it comes to Mamzeret, Suffolk Mamza is Mutter Medial Raika. The only reason that we are Makpid Midrabbanon on a Suffolk, Lo Yavom Mamza Bekal Hashem, Chazal say, Lo Yavom Mamza Vadai Bekal Hashem Kahal Vadai. The only reason we're Makpid, even with one Suffolk, is because ma'ala asu biyuchasin. We want to be sure that we have good Jewish stock. But once it's a nisha de rabbanan, if you can create a sveik sveika, if you can create a double doubt, if you can create two reasons lahakel, inevitably you can solve the problem. Also, when it comes to mamzerut, there's a big additional factor. The same sugya in Kedushin also says, kivin dinitmu, nitmu, that once the mamzer is lost, the part of Klal Yisrael, you don't walk around saying this guy is a mamzer. It's forgotten, it's lost, it's dissolved. There's a lot of intermarriage. Even Mashiach Tzidkenu will not declare him a mamzer. Kivin dinitma'a nitma'a. So with mamzeret, Chazal, the Rabbanim, the Poskim, Rav Ovadia, wonders. And here I come to a very interesting question that I was asked in this classroom a few weeks ago. A Rav came into the room, I didn't know who he was. Maybe you recall someone with a long beard and rabbinic clothing. After the class, he introduced himself. He's a virtual Talmud from England.
Manchester,
correct. And he said to me that he was meeting with a group of rabbanim. I don't know if they're on the level of learning. I've been learning a whole lifetime, so I know a drop already. Baruch Hashem. So he said to me, it's very interesting, we were talking about that sometimes halacha goes against the truth. And he brought an example, what I stated in class, that Rav Ovadia refused to accept DNA as a simin muvak to declare a kid a mamza. The woman was living with men, she was not divorced yet, and here you find the man and you do the DNA test, and it's his DNA, and yet the Rabbanim will not accept it and not declare a mamzer on that basis. And I said to him, and I elaborate now, do you see what his question meant? Moshe, his question meant, you're contradicting the Western world. In the Western world, there's nothing greater proof than DNA. Guys have been pulled out of the electric chair because they found DNA here. You know what's going on in Israel with the murder up north? They found the hair, the DNA. And here, the DNA indicates this is the husband. And I said to him, this is the difference between the Western world and Halacha. Halacha operates within its own parameters, within its own boundaries. We needn't have absolute truth. We need halachic truth. We needn't acclimate to the Western world. Halach is different. And I'll give you a classic example. Eti, have you ever cooked rice? Tell me, what happens when you leave rice and water 18 minutes, 20 minutes? It ferments or not? Do take rice, leave it around, leave it on your table. You'll come back home 2 hours later, you look at it, you say, wow, it's fermented. Chamutza, the rice, chamutz. Tell me, is that chametz on Pesach? It's interesting. The Gemara raises this very question. And the Gemara gives the classic answer. Rice cannot become chametz. Chametz is a halachic definition that has nothing to do with the biological definition of the Western world of fermentation of food. There is actually no English word that you can use for chametz. It's like a mamzer is not a bastard. You follow? There's no English word you can use. A bastard, according to the English language, is any child born from an illicit relationship. A mamzer is only born when there's a chiyuv mita, a riot, a shadish. Outside of that, there's no bastard. Mamsa in English has to be mamsa. Chametz in English, people use the word fermentation. It's not correct. Chametz is a halachic concept. It's not a Western concept, not a biological concept. When we come to Rav Ovadia's tshuvot, what that individual with his strength, with his knowledge, DNA, one fabulous example. Give you another example. Gemara in Sota, Daf Chav Zayin Amid Aleph. A woman is in Eshetish, she's separated from her husband, they had a big fight, they're going to get a get, they're fighting over money. They've been separated now for 3 years, and suddenly she is pregnant. And all the gossip on the street and in Yedir Achronad is that she was having relations with this other man. And what does Rav Ovadia say, quoting the Gemara in Sota, Daf Chav Zayin Amar Aleph, Rov bi'ilot acharei habal. She's still married. If she's still married, we go with an assumption that the majority of her sexual liaisons are with her husband. So time and again, you will have that majority to help to be mater and mamza. I give you another example. Remember the case Rav Ovadia dealt with, Pisul HaEdem, where the first marriage, the husband is demanding money and he's demanding this and demanding that, and the woman's lawyer investigates who were the witnesses at their marriage. And what are the witnesses? And he could be, Moshe, can you close the door? Is it closed? One of the witnesses is closed. I think we can't help the noise. Thank you. One of the witnesses can be with a long beard and payas and black clothes, but he happened to be, new help me out, a lawyer who appears in secular court. Eil ha-mishpatim asher tasim lifneihem v'lo lifnei ha-akum. And Reb Ovadia Yosef parcels him out and declares the marriage never took place because this aid is parcel. This is within the halacha. You see, within the halacha, if you're a master, there are things you can do, there are things you can't do. And this is the classic story from Panovich, a story I've told over in class many times.
From Moshe Feinstein was the woman that was married with a Reform rabbi.
Well, that's the easiest in the world. With a Reform rabbi, there's certainly no condition because the Edom, Apsule Edom, the rabbi himself eats chazer. The rabbi flies a plane on Shabbos morning and crashes. Well, on that case, Rav Moshe said that the Edom were psulei edot 100%. But the famous case is the Panovich case. And this case, I wasn't in Israel yet, but I remember it was all over the world. Rabbanim were talking about it. A very simple case. After World War II, there were hundreds of thousands of women who were gunot. Didn't know what happened to their husbands. And volume 3, Kafar Aron, you'll find endless material on this. Now, being mater and a guna is the only time we paskin and halacha on the basis of circumstantial evidence. There's no way you can have a bait and sit and declare a person guilty of murder, guilty of Chilul Shabbos, guilty of this or that, on the basis of circumstantial evidence. But when it comes to an aguna, if we have a body, she's no longer an aguna. The whole psak of aguna is based upon circumstantial evidence. So following World War II, by 1947, tens of thousands, not hundreds of thousands of women were permitted to remarry. They brought evidence. Their husbands were last seen waiting in line to the gas chambers, lo aleinu. They brought evidence they were on a march where no one survived, etc., etc. No, don't you think at times mistakes were made? It's inevitable. We're only human beings. We don't know everything. So this man survived, wound up in Borough Park. The lady survived, wound up in Eretz Yisrael, B'nai Brak, and she got a heter to remarry, had two children. These are Chassidish Yidden, Charedish Yidden. The two boys were in Panovich Yeshiva Latzirim, where Rabbi Steinman was the Rosh Yeshiva. Young kids. The husband made a little money in Borough Park, and this before the Six-Day War, he decided to visit Israel. When you visited Israel, whether he married or not is immaterial. He can have a second wife. But let's assume he did marry. But he decided to visit Israel. Those days before the Six-Day War, the first place a frum Jew went was to B'nai Brak. Israel, Jerusalem was then a little city split in half. There's nothing to do here, nothing to see. No Kotel. But B'nai Brak, Panovich, Vizhnitz. So I went to B'nai Brak the second day he's here. And walking along the street, he meets this woman taking her two kids to yeshiva, and it's his first wife. His wife before Hitler. And they were in a state of shock. And this is the case that came to Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank. And Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank had the husband in one room, the woman in another room. And he had the husband declare to the cipher to write the get. Everything done lishma. Gave the get to the shliach. Told the shliach to go into a third room and not to appear until he would send for him. And while the shliach was in the side room, he had the husband be mevatel the get in front of one person. And therefore, since you mevatel the get, asita shelo kahogin, hafkat kedushin lemafreya, put the exact gemara of that I quoted from Gittin, halacha lemaisa. And then, with this precedent, Rav Ovadia Yosef quotes it and absolutely authorizes in a case where it can be done, where there's the first husband alive, willing to give a get, absolutely use this as a sniff to whatever the question is, as you see in Rav Ovadia, lahatir the isha. This goes back to the Masham Shvadran, over 110 years ago, early 1900s, raised the question, if you can do this. We're not certain what his maskana was. It appears that he did permit it, but at the end there also was a little bit, I want others to agree with me, but davar tzarich hechreya. I can also tell you that Rav Herzog, when this question came up in 47, 48, it's probably the most famous question that Rav Herzog ever got. It's with the Yemenite Aliyahs, has to be 48, 49, the magic carpet, where women came to Israel and the whole Yemenite community came, and you had a few cases where these women were married off by their fathers when they were minors, and the father can be Makadish, a girl when she's a Ktana, could also be a Nahara. They knew nothing about it, and she came with a husband that they later married on their own. And now they're all united, and here comes a man who claims, this was my wife, her father. I gave him money in the tavern when we were a little bit drunk and dancing on the tables in front of two Adim to marry his daughter. And these cases came before Rav Herzog. And again, the question was, can we use the Gemara in Gittin to do a Bitul Haget? And therefore, be mafkiya kedushin l'mafreya. And Rav Herzog also. And here, we don't know what finally happened, because these tshuvot of Rav Herzog were never prepared for publication. They were published from manuscript, and we don't know what the final outcome was. Yes, yes, Moshe.
The Rambam and Shulchan are both asking that the get is batal. We don't pass him like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and like Gemara, and we don't say that the kiddushin is mufka, according to the
Shulchan. One second. If he gave the get shelo b'fnei hashliach
and
retroactively,
we don't pass him that way. The Shulchan doesn't pass him that way. It's a machlokas. Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel.
But right then, the Tosfos and
and Rambam and Shulchan are both passing that the get is batel. We're not mafkia the kedushin.
What? One second. When you say the get is batel,
and meaning that the kedushin is still there. The opinion is, Shimon Gamliel says, no, you can't be mabatel because why? Because they made rule that you can't be mabatel lo b'fnei hashliach, and therefore they're mafkia the kedushin.
Makoch based in Yafa.
Right. The Rambam doesn't pass in that way.
Yeah. So halacha l'maisa, the Masham proposed this lahalacha. I have to see what he does with the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam. I don't recall of him. I have to look at the Tshuva. But look into Rakefet Aaron, you have all the sources there. He proposed it lahalacha. Rav Herzog proposed it lahalacha. Rav Frank did it lahalacha. Rav Frank did not publish the Tshuva because he said, if Vulnish the kind of the Gassel Reden from Mir. A translation, I don't want the kids in the street to talk about it. They don't know what we're doing. They don't understand the sources. And halacha l'maisa, which is right there in Rav Avadya's tshuva, you can use it lahalacha as a sniff. So what you're saying that the Rambam, I have to look at the Rambam, I have to look at the Shulchan Aruch, but you have to see what they say. If you're aware of it, they certainly were aware of it. They wrote wrong tshuva. But that's why they said la halacha, that you can use it as a sniff. Use the word sniff. Halacha l'maisa. Let me go one step further. The state of Israel recently was shaken by two cases that came up with Agunat. One case was Rabbi Sperber, who I know from my first days in Israel, 1969 on, Danny Sperber. And he worked outside the Beit Din. And the story here with Danny Sperva, what were they able to do and the Beit Din was not able to do? They had the case of this woman. Her husband would not give a get. And years went by. And finally... Rabbi Sperber looked into the case and he found that at the wedding the ring that the Chatan gave the Kala was not his ring. The ring belonged to his mother. Now I want to tell you, I don't know if Rabbi Sperber was aware of this, probably not, because Rav Avadya's Sefer was only printed about 7 months ago and this happened already in the last few years. Rav Avadya had exactly this case, and he was mati the kid without a trace of mamzeret because his mother got a ring which did not belong to the husband, the father. It belonged to his mother. And if you recall, there was a long tshuva from Rav Avadya, how you give the ring if it's not yours, how you make a kinyan, how you have to understand it. And this was the basis that Rabbi Sperber with his bacon with matzah. Why the rabbinate did not paskin this way, I don't know. We don't have all the evidence. We don't have all the evidence on either side. But it's very interesting that this case, when I saw it, I said, wow, this is exactly Rav Avadya. But what I'm saying is something new because it didn't exist when this case was in the public thoroughfare. The other case, which is much more in the public thoroughfare, was a psak of the Beit Din in Haifa. And here it's a very sad case. Here's a picture of a man who looks like one of us, one of my children, one of my grandchildren, one of my great-grandchildren, one of the crowd I hang out with. Here was a man who was in Bar Ilan, very brilliant, on the faculty, doing research, and his marriage broke up and he refused to give the get. And when I read this article, I can tell you that I've met people like this. It's exactly, I've seen this in action. People who are so self-centered, who feel they know more than anyone, that they're always absolutely right. What he put this woman through, refused to give a get. It was a very famous case. It went from Beitin to Beitin. They demanded that he give the get. They issued a sirev against him. He can't have an aliyah. He can't have this. He can't have that. And he fled the country on a false passport. And they're trying to extradite him now. But I don't know if that's enough of a crime to bring him. I think he's in Belgium. He wound up now. He was in England. Now he's in Belgium. So far, he hasn't brought back. But one... yes, their children. One lawyer or whoever handled her case, maybe he studied me, I don't know, but he did exactly what I would have done, and it's a shame it took years. He said, check the Adam. Who were the Adam? This is the first thing you have to do. This was the case Rav Ovadia came to from America, the famous Greenberg case, where a Kohen wanted to marry a Grusha, and they checked the Edom, and it turned out, I told you about this case, it turned out that one of the Edom was a Mechalel Shabbos, or Avadi was able to paskin, there was never a first marriage, therefore she didn't really need a get, therefore she's not a Grusha. By the way, Moshe, it would also go against the Psak Bashkenazim, that once a get is given, there's a cold get, etc. But this is the way Rav Avadi paskin, there are other Shittot, there's Metzarev Shittot, Metzarev Snifim, and... check the Edom. They checked the Edom. One of the Edom was Tucker, a raised religious, wasn't married, became a datlash, threw away his kippah, played around with Shabbos, played around with Kashrut when he was out of the house. They had witnesses to this. Played around with women. They puzzled the aid. And on that basis, there was never a marriage, and they were matir ha-lacha-lacha after years of difficulty. And I want you to know, when this case made the headlines, they already started yelling and shouting in the Yerushalayim circles, Oyveya Beitin, they're being matish alokadin, and they were yelling and shouting, and some of the gedolei harabanim came out and told them, keep your mouth shut or we'll show what amei haaretz you are. This is an absolute case with precedents going back hundreds of years where you can be matir on the basis that there were no proper edim. So what do you see? You see from this that Rabbanim can act. They have to have strength. They have to be strong. They have to be lamdanim. But they can only act within the halachic context. You can't come and apply common sense or Western values. There's a halachic context. At times it disagrees with the Western world. You can't say an assumption the man is gone 5 years. We can assume he's dead. At times it disagrees on a different level with the Western world. In the Western world, for DNA, you can execute or not execute someone. In halacha, we will not use DNA as a simen mufak, and it's perfectly in consonance with the Vah Hashem Zu Halacha. And I want to end off. I have more examples to show you what goes on here with proposals and everyone trying to solve this terrible problem. I don't want to minimize it. This terrible problem of people who are cruel, vicious to women. So, yes, Moshe.
Yeah, my mistake. The Shulchan has to be done with the nation I am, right?
That's why they said one.
It sounds like the get is good.
No. So that's why they said one. Look at the tshuva. Thank you for correcting yourself. But that's why you notice I said one in front of one. I knew what I said in front of Tosfos there. But I don't want to go into detail because as is, it's a very heavy shiva. My dear students, let me reiterate. So what do we see? Look, the problems are real. I don't want to minimize it. Rabbi Rachman's intentions were good, but we have to understand where Western thinking and halakhic thinking differ. And the great challenge to us when we live in two worlds, and inevitably all of us from the Torah Kata down live in two worlds. There's no way you can build a total mechitza, a total ghetto around your thinking, your children. There's a big world out there, and it's part and parcel of everyone. It's a global village today. But Rabbi Rachman's proposal was, yes, he quotes two Gemaras. The Gemaras are there, Tavla Meitiv Du, Hafkat Kedushin. But we have to know when, what we can accept, what the limits are. Rav Ovadia is a striking example of a posek mufak, a London, unbelievable knowledge, and the courage, the backbone, the breita pleitza, the backbone to paskin, and with mamzeret, what that man was able to accomplish. If Dayanim now growing up here and understanding these problems will take his thinking further, you will have enabled many young people to go on to live a Torah life in dignity. And I want to end off, and this is the beautiful Rambam, Hilchot Malachim, Perek Yud Bet, Halacha Gimel, and he describes Yemot HaMashiach, and he talks about Mashiach Tzidkenu, Ve'enu Miyaches Yisrael Ela L'Shvatim, that when he looks at you, we're going to have to walk before Mashiach. He's going to tell Jack, you're from Shevet Binyamin. He's going to tell Steve, you're from Shevet Naphtali. He's going to tell Yomo, you're from Shevet Yehuda. Please. That's all he's going to do. Aval ein omer al shehein b'cheskat kashrut. People who are normal Jews. He's not going to say, ze mamza, ze eved, she'adin hu, she'mishpacha she'nitma'ah, nitma'ah. And that's the Rambam, and that's why Reb Ovadia can paskin as he does, and this is behind the halachic thinking, very different than the Western world. DNA, siman beinoni, not a simin mufak, and I hope the rabbi from Manchester understands me well. Rov bilot acharei habal. My dear students, what I've given you is only an entree. You can take this and learn halacha for the next 120 years and take these concepts and see how it all falls into place. I have to tell you, tomorrow will be a much easier shiur to listen to, but a much filled with information. Mori Rebbe, the Rav in Berlin. What Berlin, what he saw. These are very formative years, and in Rakefet's humble opinion, what influenced the rest of his life from what the Rav called the seven good years in Berlin. A few freebies, if anyone's interested, my Talmud, you got a lift, okay. My Talmud, Mark, he... This young man is both a Rav and a dentist, fine Talmud Chacham, a contemporary of Klausner in the Shia. His Divrei Torah that he taught Reb Heschel Shechter and Pashit Chayei Sara, and Reb Heschel was impressed, so if you want a copy, fine. The obituary of Rabbi David Posner, the senior rabbi of Temple Emanuel. Very interesting obituary, Nishta Abrekali Yiddishkeit. His whole life was Latakeno. Nice guy, but wow, how does Yiddishkeit come out of that? Michael, just for you. Now running for office, Adam Greenberg. This name mean anything to anybody? No. It's a Jewish boy who made the major leagues and his first at bat, with so much promise, was hit by a pitch that almost killed him. And then when he never recovered entirely, but he recovered enough that a team gave him another time at bat where I think he fouled off or struck out or they walked him, whatever, And everyone applauded him. They hugged him, his teammates. And now he's a Jewish boy, a brilliant guy. He's now running for office. So beautiful article. And this is an article on how baseball has lost its attraction. Can you imagine, it's the World Series now, and Moshe hasn't said a word today about how the
Red Sox are up 2-1. The Red Sox 18-inning game. It's
3-1 now. You're behind the times.
I missed last night.
3-1. How the hasn't said a word this morning. A little bit. But name a famous baseball player. Everyone knows the famous names in basketball, football. This is
Mike
how the...
Trout.
Correct. Trout. I once had a student, a classmate, Trout. This is the New York Times, how it covered the 1916 World Series, which was the first time that Boston and the Red Sox faced each other. Here's an article on Babe Ruth about a book that came out by a Jewish lady. She's written other books on baseball. She's excellent. The big fella, Babe Ruth, the first modern celebrity. Listen, someone had written on Babe Ruth. The answer is he was a kid who never grew up, who was a big benevol at the same time as he always loved children. But nothing to rave about. This is about Pennsylvania, the Catholic scandal there with the priest. If the Catholic Church survives, it's unbelievable. I mean, you got to read this. It's beyond words. From the bishop down, archbishop down, everyone was a maneuver.
This is
very interesting. This is a famous doctor, thank God, not Jewish, Reginald Archibald. Rockefeller University Hospital research. He's no longer alive. Every kid that he dealt with, he molested. I ask God, what a world! And this is very interesting. The New York Times: a Michigan pharmacist refused to dispense miscarriage medication. He felt that the woman was doing an abortion, and he doesn't believe in abortions. And this is like the case there was that I think finally was overthrown by the Supreme Court of the florist or the caterer who refused to send flowers to a same-sex wedding, or a caterer, I think, also who refused to cater, and they took them to court. So this is a pharmacist. All right, we're not going to correct the world, but let's hope for Besorah Tova, Yeshuot Nechamot, until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya. Yes, Jack.
Okay. I know which comment first.
What?
You told the story many times about the Rav and the Galil, the Sader Kiddushin, and the Gosher Shomer.